But, Daphne, before you leave us, I want you to know that you are loved.
Okay. I call because I have a question. How do I ask a question?
That is the Wednesday is for is a question and answer session, and those the questions they need to be submitted per email.
Oh, okay.
So, on the Monday call, Vin picks a topic, and Wednesday is the call, and then Sunday is the grid healing call.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for being.
Good evening. Hi, Francis calling from Concord, California.
Hi, Francis. Good evening to you. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for being here.
This is Anna from California.
Hello, Anna. How are you doing tonight?
Hello. Very well. Thank you. I'm happy to be with everyone here.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm. Can we star six?
Star six is to mute yourself, and if you want to say something again, star six will also unmute you.
All right, I'll star six. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here. And I believe more people join in. If so, if there are more people who want to announce themselves, feel free to do so. All right, I hear Daphne, her song in the background. That means we are live on BBS Radio. For those who have joined in over the internet, welcome to the call. We are 7 minutes away from the official starting point. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hello, this is Wynn in Sedona, Arizona.
Welcome to the call, Wynn.
Look, you see that? I just say it really straight. I'm being nice. I'm not making snide answers. And people are still...
You said it's very nice. Turn it around now, please.
Now people are giggling at me.
You're loved.
That's because you just sound like one of us, Wynn.
Well, we do have a new Daphne on the call. This is Daphne from Illinois.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Daphne. Daphne, you can't channel, can you?
Not that I know of. Maybe.
All right.
I'm experiencing a lot of new things.
You are? Okay,
yes.
Great. Well, welcome. We're going to have an interesting call tonight. And one of the amazing things about these calls is that this loving energy comes into many of the calls that people can feel. And you keep hanging in, you'll get that experience. Now, Daphne's not on the line, is she?
Yes.
Daphne number one. You're Daphne.
Sorry, you're number two, Daphne from Illinois.
I'm number two? Okay, thank you.
Did you read my book?
No.
Did you download it?
No.
How did you hear about it?
But Angel, I had an angel reading and she told me about you.
Oh, really? Well, make sure you go to my website and download my free book, okay?
Okay.
Intelligent-infinity.com, okay?
Okay.
Who did your angel reading?
Denise Sutherland.
Really? Well,
yeah.
I don't even know who she is, so that's really neat that she referred us. Great. Now, let me get Daphne number one. You can hear the story of why I have a predisposition towards Daphne.
Hey, hi, this is Ray from Nevada. I'm online.
Ray, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
All right. And I believe we had more people join in here over the last minute or two. If you want to do so, please say your name and location. Just, 4 minutes till the hour. Let's see. Does anybody know if Vin got the email out for tonight's call?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
People did get an email today, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And Carla's going to be on with us today.
All right.
Except we're not going to talk about the raw material tonight.
Good evening, welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Good evening, Joel.
Hey, Joel, welcome to the call. How are you doing?
Is that Joel Terry?
Yes.
Hi, Joel.
How are you doing?
You know, it's pretty easy to remember your last name.
Yeah, I popped up an email early this morning. Well, not quasi-early, real early for you.
Uh-huh. Was I up? Did I answer it?
I have no idea. I don't know. I took out my email probably a couple hours ago. I got the Gregorian thing over here.
I want to welcome those who just called in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Mac from Utah.
Hey, Mac. Welcome to the call. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing good.
All right.
Mac, I love the sound of your voice.
Thanks. Hey, this is Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Hey, how are you, Carla?
Well, I'm doing just fine. How are you, buddy?
For being here.
Morgan from California.
Hello, Morgan. More people have joined a minute if you want to do so.
Hi, Steve. The gum sure showed up.
Oh. Right. I'm going to mute a few lines.
Is that a gum
background
chewer or a peanut butter chewer? Terry, are you there?
Here. Yes.
You're there?
Yes.
That's not you, is it? That's not you, because I can tell.
No, it's not me, because I was muted.
Okay, good.
And both of you sound clearer. Your lungs are. Your voice is.
We do? Well,
stop breathing, Terry.
Hello, this is Ron in Mountain Grove.
Ron, good evening. Call.
Now, that's two guys in Utah that are on the line, right?
No, in Missouri.
Oh, Missouri, right.
But it would be great to have a discussion between those two. Mac and Ron, let's pick a topic.
Hey, just out of curiosity, has anyone else on the line suddenly stopped receiving the change? In 2013, I've not received a single email. They seem to stop, and I thought someone else had mentioned that as well.
Joel, let me tell you something. There's a couple of things that can happen, and I don't understand this, and it's tough for me. But try signing in again on a different email than you normally get, okay? Go to Intelligent Infinity, act like you're downloading the book, okay? And see if it starts working in that new email. One of the things that happens with my email company, the ones that sends out the emails, if you ever take any email that I sent you and put it in a spam folder, and one time I sent something out that wasn't obvious, it was from me, and I had 50 people put it in their spam folder. When you put it in your spam folder, it automatically notifies my company that you're recognizing my emails as spam, and they blackball you.
But I'm not intelligent enough to do that. I'm not a techie. You know, if something breaks on my computer, email.
Well, nonetheless, I don't ever take people off. And I know we have thousands of people that are getting emails. And occasionally, someone comes in like you that says, my email suddenly stopped. Now, I can go check. The most I can do is I can run a check on your name and see if you're still stuck.
No, you didn't get an email, but it was still there.
Yeah. I did say that. Yeah. You were blackballed. So the easiest solution is to start another, you know, get a Yahoo or a Gmail account and sign up again. Because otherwise, know where to go. And if I start working with a company, so to speak, a day on the phone, try to figure it out, they still may not figure it out. So
I had to do the same thing. Open the Yahoo email account, all the your stuff going to email. All right, it's 603 Win.
Yeah, is Terry's on the line? Daphne's on the line. Daphne, are you on the line?
Yes. Daphne, too, I'm sorry.
Daphne,
too. All right. I'll try to stop doing that.
at least Joel's first name is Joel and his last name is Terry.
People are. If I had a nickel for every time someone said, oh, you got two first names.
But, you know, listen, Joel, be abundant. Ask for a dollar.
Let me see. I'm
Pride will make you poor.
Is this your phone? Is this Daphne? Hi, Daphne.
Is that Valerie?
Yes.
Yep, it's Valerie.
Right, I'm mute you.
All right, well, all right. If Daphne's not here, so be it.
Did you talk?
Did I what?
Did you talk to her?
I did. I talked to her, and I thought she was going to be on. But I think she was mad at me for something, so she might have forgotten. All right, let me see now. It is, you're right, it's 6:04, and we're going to mute everybody. And let's just check. Carla, are you there? Do I hear
I
you?
I am.
And Terry, I hear you. Terry, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay. And we'll just see if Daphne shows up. Hi, did you just mute all of the tones?
Affirmative.
Okay, great.
This conference is being recorded.
All right, this is January 7th, 2013, Monday night. Winfrey in Sedona. Terry is Brown in Sedona, and Carla Rucker in Anchorage, Kentucky. And Carla is on tonight, not as a guest. She's on as part of the family. You know, they're all in the, what did I say? All in the family, all in the family with a twist.
Lemon or lime.
And if you're listening for the first time, if you're one of those new people, be patient, because it's not obvious what happens here. This is a very unusual call, and it's based on this idea that there is intelligence in other dimensions, in other timelines. And there's positive intelligence. There's negative intelligence as well. And we think we're connecting with positive intelligence. And this intelligence has explained itself as these two group souls, one of them that's made up of graduates of this realm, and one of them that didn't come into this realm that created it. Now, that sounds pretty ludicrous, doesn't it? If I came into a call and I heard somebody said that, especially if they sounded like me, I would say, is this guy putting this on? Well, you know, you have to make your own decision, but there's a huge amount of evidence that what I just said is actually true, but you're not supposed to believe it until you kick the tires quite a bit. And so, on this call tonight, I'm going to talk about something that I discovered in 2003 when I was busy kicking the tires, because there is a sense of unreality to it. And the premises of what we're doing is so out there, and it is so out of normal reality, that you have to kick the tires. I mean, you can't believe it at first
glance.
Wouldn't want you to.
We wouldn't want you to. We want you to kick the tires. So the goal here is to make you curious, not to, you know, create a new system of reality for you to believe in because we say it. And what happens is there's a lot of phenomena around these calls. There's a lot of energies that people feel on these calls. And that's one of, to me, I'm just the guy that's discovering things. I'm always discovering things. I'm not sitting on any kind of exalted position.
And I'm just a guy.
I never will. Because that's a trap. Who wants to be stuck in it? I've already trapped myself in responsibility of 3 conference calls a week. And, you know, I'm not doing that because I like people listening to me. I'm doing it because I have learned since the time we started doing this that for many people, this is incredibly important. It answers questions that they've had all their lives. It takes away doubts about things. It is the essence of religion without a belief system, without anything to believe in, and it's the experience of those higher sources that just might have been intervening in this realm throughout history and that we've thought of as God. But it's a new explanation and understanding of how God works. And, you know, there are many things that validate the work. There's the Edgar Cayce, David Wilcox story. There's the story is not important, except in as much as that it gets your attention. And it says, maybe I should pay attention to that, because Edgar Cayce built credibility over many years after his death. And then there's the crazy, what I call it the crazy story of Winfrey, where I have a new personal relationship. I'm not allowed to use the word girlfriend, Carla. I've been forbidden to use the word girlfriend. So it's Daphne, are you on the line? Hello, Daphne.
No, she's not.
No, okay. Well, her name was Daphne, and we have this epic car ride where it's pouring rain, and we do a prayer. At the end of the prayer, I said, does anyone want to talk to me? And she starts talking and answering questions. And then we have Terry, who, when I asked them, was Terry anybody famous, they said, look up St. Catherine of Siena, who happened to have been this awkward young woman who would walk into a Catholic church in Siena, Italy, and they would ask her questions and write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking to them through her. And Terry happens to be the spitting image of St. Catherine. And, I mean, there's all kinds of little things like that. And I remember when this was first happening for me, I kept thinking, could this be negative? Could the negative be creating a show for me so I would buy into it? Because there is a negative, and the negative comes through channeling, and they can be deceptive. And I said, no, they could never put together all these incidents. I mean, they would have had to create Terry looking like St. Catherine. They would have had to create me going to this conference in Monterey in 2002. Against all odds, I went there to interview some people in my broken-down car with not enough money to fix it if it broke down. So I just went on a prayer, drove 400 miles, walk in, and there's Daphne 1, staring at me. And I said, no, the negative could never, execute all that. And, you know, the negative can talk through somebody, and they can talk about love light, and they can sound really impressive. And you have to, any incident of channeling, you have to look at it deeply. You can't believe it. And in particular, you can't believe it because of an exalted name. In other words, if somebody is channeling and they say, this is Jesus, or say, Archangel Michael, or whoever, you can't believe that whoever's talking is who they say they are. You can consider the possibility. And the real bottom line is, can you take something from that experience home with you and change your life? If you do that, it doesn't matter who was talking, because you changed your life. But oftentimes the negative will use exalted names because it's a way of getting you to give up your power. Well, when I was first in the middle of all of this, I was checking it and challenging it, and I was talking to a voice through Daphne and then Terry that said they created the physical universe. And it was so casual. I mean, Daphne would knock me on the shoulder and say, those guys want to talk to you again. And I said, they can't really be who they say they are, but I'm just going to ask them questions and record it. And they said they were the Council of Elohim. And then as I was reading David Wilcock's material, David kept referring to this lady in Kentucky named Carla Ruckert and how much he was influenced by her. And Carla had this material called The Law of One, the Ra Law of One, and it's in 5 books. You can go to her website, llresearch.org, and you can buy the books on Amazon. You can download them on our website. And there were these dialogues with this voice that identified itself as a group soul, and they said they were graduates of this realm, i.e., in the Buddhist terminology, they got off the wheel of reincarnation. Now, in the Buddhist terminology, or anytime you hear about this, pardon me?
Buddhists say the wheel of karma.
The wheel of karma. Okay. The wheel of karma. Thank you. Carla's very articulate, so I have to watch myself. Carla and Terry were both librarians. Well, in any case, of course, I had studied metaphysical things, and I had read about the wheel of karma, and that you keep coming back, and that eventually you could leave this realm. But they never said where you went, okay, that I read. And now this woman, Carla Ruckert, has this voice that's identifying itself as a group soul and saying, this is where they go eventually. Now, not immediately. They go to other planets. They go through more evolution. But the end point, as far as I can tell, is to be part of this group soul that then acts as a helper and guide for planets at lower levels of evolution. So I'm doing everything I can to try to make this real for myself, because what am I supposed to do with this? I felt crazy. And I mean, there was more to it than that. I mean, Daphne was having negative attacks. Daphne would be screaming. I asked in one of the channelings with Daphne, I said, how do I connect with the parts of me that exist in other dimensions? Because I've had all these synchronicities all my life. And then they said, write down your dreams. And that night, I put a pad by my bed, started writing down my dreams. And when I looked at the pad in the morning, I saw messages like, it's the insanity of passion that makes things happen in the real world. Communication from another dimension, just like Casey. He slept to connect with this dimension. You have to look tall and thin. We'd like you to be the front man. Now, keep in mind, I'm living in an RV. I'm getting thinner. I've got no money coming in. I'm trying to write this book on David Wilcock, Edgar Cayce. My new personal relationship, got a voice coming through her that says they created the physical universe, and she leaves me, and my old personal relationship starts channeling the same voice, and they say, what I'm doing is really important. Now, truthfully, I'm thinking maybe they're trying to get me on an ego trip here. They're trying to, I mean, you're supposed to be the front man. Oh, yeah, they're kissing up to me. Why didn't they pick somebody? Somebody else could do this job way better than me. What am I, you know, I don't even know what to do. I mean, David was very upset with me when I had this channeling experience because here I was his biographer and telling his story. And suddenly, I've got voices talking to me that are doing miracles. And so I started doing a lot of cross-referencing on the internet. And I started doing search words, and Steve will come up because I was being exposed to material that I had never heard anyone say. And I said to myself, if this is true, somewhere there's got to be clues somewhere. And so I needed to look and find them. In fact, at that time, I remember I took one of my trips in one of my old funky car from Los Angeles to Laughlin, Nevada, because I wanted to meet this woman, Carla Ruckert. I wanted to see if she was crazy, because everything was so crazy. I mean, put yourself in my shoes, okay? I'm writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. That was way crazy enough. Now, my new friend is channeling a voice that says they created the physical universe. And now they're talking to me in my dreams and giving me what seems to be messages of guidance. And so tonight I want to talk about one of the things that I discovered when I was doing this research. And I did a Google search on the word Elohim, and I found something called exegesis. It was written by a guy by the name of Philip J. Dick. And it was a description of Philip K. Dick. Philip K. Dick, thank you. She just learned about him today.
I read Philip K. Dick when I was in my 20s and 30s.
Did you?
I thought of him as a science fiction / mystery writer.
Right.
I didn't realize that he had done any philosophizing until you sent me this exegesis article. And
right.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I read this article, and Philip J. Dick is talking about the Elohim in it. He mentions that that's where I came up. I got the word Elohim, and as I read the article, and I'm going to read that article tonight, as I read the article, I said, this guy is explaining exactly the same things that were coming through Carla Ruckert, through David Wilcock, and through Daphne. And I was being, you know, I was being exposed to these new ideas. And I said, why have I never heard of this before? And here he wrote this. Now, he wrote this in a journal. Let me tell you a little bit about Philip Dick. He happened to live in Berkeley at the same time I lived in Berkeley. He was a misfit. He didn't fit in. He never made much money. He used to write for trashy science fiction stories. And I don't know if you remember, there was a whole bunch of things that would be on the newsstands then, called Astounding Science Fiction. Mm-hmm. I think they would be in the supermarket checkout, you know, next to the National Enquirer. And there were comic books, science fiction comic books. And I believe he did those. And all of his life, he was destitute, living hand to mouth. And he was having mystical experiences And he kept a journal of his mystical experiences. And after he died, 20 years later, they started turning his stories into movies. And they became super successful. And probably, I think the first movie was Blade Runner. And later on, there was Total Recall. And people say the Matrix series wouldn't have happened if Philip Dick didn't lay the foundation. Well, now they're starting to put his journal up on the internet, and because everyone's interested in Philip Dick because of this amazing story of this guy that's writing science fiction stories for books, for these magazines, and 20 years later, he's a superstar, and his estate goes up millions of dollars every time a movie comes out, and the poor guy lived like a recluse in Berkeley, probably drinking, probably doing drugs, and communicating with what appears to be the Elohim. I wish Daphne was on, because he had an experience that reminds me of some experiences Daphne had. I just printed this out. On February 20th, 1974, Dick was hit with the force of an extraordinary revelation after a visit to the dentist for an impacted tooth for which he had received a dose of sodium pentothal. A young woman delivered a bottle of Darvon tablets to his apartment in Fullerton, California. She was wearing a necklace with the pendant of a golden fish, an ancient Christian symbol that had been adopted by the Jesus counterculture movement in the 60s. The fish pendant, on Dick's account, began to emit a golden ray of light, which Dick suddenly experienced what he called, with a nod to Plato, anamnesis, the recollection or total recall of the entire sum of knowledge. Dick claimed to have access to what philosophers call the faculty of intellectual intuition, the direct perception by the mind of a metaphysical reality behind screens of appearance. Many philosophers since Kant have insisted that such intellectual intuition is available only to human beings in the guise of fraudulent obscurantism, usually as a religious or mystical experience, like Swedenborg's visions of the angelic multitude. Yet the golden fish episode was just the beginning. In the following days and week, Dick experienced and indeed enjoyed a couple of night-long psychedelic visions with phantasmagoric visual light shows. These hypnagogic episodes continued off and on, together with hearing voices, let me say that again, hearing voices, and prophetic dreams until his death 8 years later at age 53. Many very weird things happened, too many to list here, including a clay pot that Dick called Ho-On, or O-Ho, which spoke to him about various deep spiritual issues in a brash and irritable voice. Now, was that just bad acid or good sodium pentothal? Was Dick seriously bonkers? Was he psychotic? Was he schizophrenic? And then he writes, "The schizophrenic is a leap ahead that failed. Were the visions simply the effect of a series of brain seizures, temporary lobe epilepsy? Could we now explain away Dick's revelatory experience by some better neuroscientific story about the brain? Perhaps. But the problem is that in each of these casual explanations, there is missed the richness of the phenomena that Dick was trying to describe, and also overlooks his unique means for describing them." Well, just want to give you a little bit about the guy's background. Hearing voices, being crazy. And Daphne, are you here? God, I wish Daphne was on, because of all the people in our group, Daphne has the most similar, I think, the most similar experience to Philip Dick, because she's had those kinds of, have you had those kinds of experiences, Carla?
Well, I've had lots of times when I was either in the light or I was the light, but I haven't had the experience of seeing something that was symbolic. Now, Don, at one time, we were meditating together, and after the meditation, he said, "You're not going to believe this, but I was in another reality." And he said all the colors were alive, and I saw the rising of the most beautiful dawn that I have ever seen. He said, I would open my eyes, I'd be right here in the room, I'd close them, I'd be back there. He did that several times just to make sure that he wasn't crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave himself to it, and the experience lasted about a half an hour. And he was absolutely exalted. And he asked Ra about it later, and the Ra group said that he was experiencing what the magicians of the West have called the Golden Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an initiatory experience. But like Dick, Don was an extremely learned person that had been seeking all his life. Unlike Philip Dick, Don was very steady. You know, he was a teacher, and then he left teaching because he could make a whole lot more money if he flew airplanes for a big airline. He flew for Eastern Airlines for like 15 years. And he was very steady, but I think that what puts the two together is not just that they were seeking, Don was the most serious seeker I've ever known, but that they were learning in philosophy and in the various offshoots of philosophy that we can call religion.
Mm-hmm.
The old religion. That we don't see much anymore. Trying to think what they're called. Having trouble with words. But there was a tremendous amount of energy in people who believed in gnosis or pure insight,
mm-hmm.
which is very well, very much connected to a man that. Anamnesis, I will say the word right.
That word again.
Yeah, it's just that the belief here for Dick was, and also for Plato, that, I mean, he was working with Plato's work when he said this, that there was a knowledge of everything that was available to us. But that we had forgotten because of the shock of birth into this realm. And he felt he was more a midwife than a philosopher. He was helping people remember what they already knew.
Now, are you talking about Plato? Don? Plato.
I was talking about Plato. So
right.
that belief fueled the religion that I'm not remembering right now. Zoroastrianism. There we go.
Right. Okay. Terry, before...
Yes.
When I read that stuff about Philip Dick, did you have any... Now, you're so good. I'm sure you never did drugs, right? Okay, you don't have to do it. Don't admit to it.
That's a legal question.
Yeah.
Did the story of Philip Dick having that kind of mystical experience, did you ever have an experience like that was memorable?
Well, I have experiences, like even now, where like the density of light really increases and it's like everything shines like jewels. Like when they
know
to
that everything is okay. It all makes sense, you know, that's a wonderful part of my vision. It's just that knowledge that all is well.
Yes, it is.
I love that. Everything
no matter what's going on.
So everything that you like, I interrupt you. Go ahead.
I did a lot of work on myself for about 50 years to be able to distinguish, like, if I would hear voices, what was it? Was it from my mind, or was it from something from outside? Was it a visiting ghost? Exactly what was it? I spent a lot of time learning to tune myself so that I got a lot of discernment about what was going on. And when I hear about Philip Dick, it sounded like he was getting a lot of phenomena, and he was cutting through realities and getting insight from the higher realm.
Well, in this section of Philip Dick that I am going to read tonight, before I read it, I want to go back to one of the underpinnings of the raw material from Carla Rucker. This is what really struck me. This is what gave me my aha experience. This is what started to move in my gut to say, Lynn, this is real, because it was hard to integrate it as being real. I mean, it was so outside of everything. You know, originally I was thinking about New Age, and I identified with being New Age and everything we should all be loving with each other. And now I'm learning about this battle, I won't say battle, but this reality system where dark and light, there's negative and positive, vying for energetic, dominancy, but it's not the right word, but
control?
Because it's control. It's like control. Well, the positive doesn't vie for control it so much as it infiltrates the realm. And it's kind of like if you are in a dark room and you turn on the light, the dark can't help but get lit up. Except it usually goes out again as soon as the light goes off. It hasn't learned to hold the light on, but it feels the light when it goes on. Well, in Carla's cosmology, in the raw material, there was this explanation that this realm was fairly screwed up and fairly under the control of the negative, and that there was only one way to remedy this situation. And that was that there had to be volunteers from the higher realms who would come into this realm knowing that when they got here, they would forget why they came. And they would fall into, 90% of them, according to the raw material, they would fall into the darkness of the realm. They get caught back up in reincarnation, and maybe 10% of them were able to integrate their reason for being here. And even my guess is even the 10% that were able to be of service, only a small portion of them got a full gestalt of why they were here, and the rest of them were artists, were hotel concierges, paramedic drivers, and that they, you know, people that could hold space in this realm from higher dimensions and didn't even know they were doing it. They didn't even understand it. And they were called wanderers in the raw material. And then the Elohim said that some of their legions came into this realm, and for the same purpose, usually. And again, they would get caught up in the realm, and they would lose their reason for being here, and oftentimes, they would become negative. They would be the controllers in this realm because they were powerful. And so, but if no one ever came to this realm, the realm would be like handing the whole realm over to the negative. Now, I was first exposed to that idea, I guess, through David Wilcock and the Carla Ruckert material. And I said, can this be real? Now, I'm going to tell you who are listening. If you've been coming into our calls and you keep coming back and you say there's something to that and you feel these connections, I would very strongly suggest that you are one of those people. And being one of those people doesn't mean that you're exalted. Because you graduated this realm and you come back, it's not like everyone says, oh, thank goodness somebody came back from the other side. We've been waiting for you. You're usually discarded. You're made fun of. You're crazy. And you end up like Philip Dick, living his life half crazy and being a genius writing these things. Well, in 1978, before the raw material came out, I don't know if any, Carla, had anyone ever, before you did the raw material, had anyone addressed the idea of wanderers that came in from higher realms? Are you there, Carla? Hello, Carla? Why do I not hear anything? Let me just see something.
You know what, Vince, he dropped out when you asked for it. I think she pressed the wrong button. Let's hold on a moment.
Oh, she's... Okay. Well, I'll just keep talking. You read this. Daphne, are you on the line?
I have not seen her, no.
No, okay. Let me know if you see her. All right. So, this is when I was studying all this, this is what I discovered. Philip Dick had written, it was in his journal, and how closely it matched what Carla said. And, you know, I read it, you know, 10 years ago, and I put it aside. And then a few days ago, I happened to be having a conversation with my friend, Jillian, and I brought this out and read it, and it actually, I have to get through this, I hope, without getting, if I bite my tongue, it's because it brings tears to my eyes, and it might bring tears to some of your eyes, because...
Can you hear me, Wynn?
I hear you now, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I got cut off, yeah, I called back.
Yeah. You know what, Terry should teach you how to not let that happen, okay?
Do that, Terry.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a paragraph, okay? Then I'm going to read another paragraph. I'm not going to read, this is deep, and it's like, for those of you, it's very literary and very sophisticated, and so I want to simplify it as we go to make sure no one misses it. Let's see what time it is right now. 7:41. So we have about 15 minutes. That should be enough time. And then I suggest that you look it up yourself on the internet if it reaches you. It's just look up Philip K. Dick Elohim Exegesis, E-X-E-G-E-S-I-S. Because this is one of the things that triggered me out of doubt in saying, oh, my God, this is real. This is important. And it's why I struggled for so many years to say, how do I get this out into the world? This is going to be meaningful to people. And if it wasn't for things like this, I don't think I would have endured. I would have gone and done something else. Now, I'll translate some words as we go because there's some vocabulary words here that you're not going to understand. And you will in the content. The belief that we are pluriforms of God voluntarily descended to this prison world voluntarily losing our memory, identity, and supernatural powers, all of which can be regained through anamnesis, or mystical conjunction. Now, pluriforms of God, he goes on, it actually is named for wanderers that were part of God, were part of the higher realms, that voluntarily descended to the prison world, and we've gotten lost here. And then he used, Carly, you know the word anamnesis, right?
Yes, it just means the recalling or the regaining of memory of what mm-hmm. we've lost, either from incarnations before this or simply from our total self.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But it is known, it is regarded as the great blasphemy, replication of the original sin mentioned in the first book of Adam and Eve and in Genesis. Now, you know, when I read that, Carla, I go unconscious. Are you familiar with the terminology great blasphemy?
Well, yeah.
Well, tell us. Biblically, what is the great blasphemy? I think we lost Carla again. All right, let me keep going. For this pride and aspiration, our original fall and exile and punishment are being taken from our home, the garden land, and put into the prison was inflicted on us. They wish to be equal to, like us, the Elohim say, and toss us down. Yet I have reason to believe that this, the great satanic blasphemy, is true. Now, I was hoping Carla would interpret that. She'll be on later. The idea is, I believe, that there is this illusion that we have sinned, and we are here because we sinned, and we have to redeem ourselves from our sins. And the fact of the matter is, we volunteered to come here. And in the volunteering, we couldn't help but get involved in the negative aspects of this realm. This is Wynn talking now. And that through that getting involved...
Okay, I'm back. You want me to talk about Adam and Eve, or have you gone further?
I'll go further. You know why you're dropping off?
No. Well, tell me why.
Probably because there's too much energy on the line.
So there's nothing I can do about that.
Right. Okay, so I was talking about the satanic blasphemy and the idea that we suffer in this realm because we've sinned. And in fact...
And that, you know, that's what I was going to say, was that anybody that's come up in the church has had little drilling in the fact that we are sinful. We are sinful by nature. We can't help being sinful. We can't help erring. And so... In that context, the great hero in the garden was the snake, because the snake came in and cast light onto Eve, and she realized that she was more than a sinful person. She could learn. She wanted to learn, and that turning to the light meant that, well, what were the ministers of the church going to have left if we all think that we're pluriforms of God, if we all think that we're little sparks of the divine, if we think we're already there and all we have to do is remember? That won't work. That won't work for the church. So that's the great blasphemy.
Now, what I see is that those of us who descended into this realm didn't come out like saying, hey, we're here, guys. Are you ready? We descended from heaven. They got into the most foulest, darkest stuff, not knowing what they were into, because their minds were blank. And because they went through this, they got the wisdom over many, many lifetimes to figure out how it works and to pay back, you know? But it's not the...
Which one were we in? Cain or Abel? Can you imagine the pain that people have gone through and are going through because they feel so doggone guilty?
Yes.
For everything.
I mean, they feel like
they're under judgment all the time. I mean, it's really
it's a tough room,
you know?
Those people on the line now, when you're going through tough times, you know, don't make yourself wrong and feel guilty, because it's actually built into your system to think that you could be great heroes. And maybe you won't be a hero this lifetime, you'll be a hero next lifetime. This is part of learning how the dark works, so that you can stay out of it. Let me keep going here. First, we are here voluntarily. We did not sin, and we were not punished. We elected to descend. Why? To infuse the divine into the lowest strata of creation in order to halt its decomposing, the sinking of the lower realm. Okay, and what that's saying is that our realm, this realm, was breaking off from all that is and was getting totally separated, that the beings here were going to be lost to the dark, and that we decided to come into this realm to help stop that. It's a primordial crisis in creation. And I'm not going to, let's see. If Godhead itself falling apart into its yin and yang halves, with the lower form universe as God expressed physically in time and space, the solution was for the divine, the yang, the light form, to follow the lower realm down, permeating it, and thus reuniting the cosmos into one totality. To do this, elements of light advanced, descended into the dark kingdom, the immutable prison world. And upon doing so, they shed, and they knew what they would shed, their bright nature, their memory, their identity, their faculties, their powers, and fell under the dominion of the delusion that the dark kingdom is real, which when severed from the upper realm, it is not. The world we presently live in doesn't exist. There, they have lived as prisoners of the master magicians, the lords of the dark realm, who poses as the creator, and who may not even know of the light god, the true creator, his other half. But the light god and his pluriforms, the descending, invading sparks, have cunningly distributed clues in the dark realm to recall to the drugged and intoxicated sparks of light their true nature and their mission and their true source of home. Upon encountering these cryptic clues, the raw material was a cryptic clue, okay, in this realm. The David Wilcott Edgar Cayce was a cryptic clue, starting to put it all together. These cryptic clues, the forgetful sparks of the upper realm, now prisoners in and of the lower realm, remember, regain their powers and faculties, and link back up with the upper realm and the light god. They are the light god in pluriform, his way of invading the lower form in disguise. The light god, the divine, has now crucially occupied critical stations in the sinking lower realm and begins the re-annexing of it back into the totally composed of both realms. The sinking ceases. The master magician is stripped of his autonomy and assimilated to the yang part of Godhead as its passive counterpart. And once more, there is one microcosm ruled by the yang, light god, assisted by the now receptive yin, dark side. The divine has triumphed at all levels. The prison has burst, and the vast, light-filled garden kingdom restored as the home of all creatures. These now whole creatures, composed equally of yin and yang, are what I term homeoplasmates. The yin part is home, and the light or the yang part is the plasmate, or energy part. versus the physical. Thus, renewed and complete microcosms mirroring the renewed and complete macrocosm are achieved. That means what's above matches what's below. Reality is imparted to the otherwise irreal lower realm, and the upper realm now extends physically into the realm of matter. The integrity of the Godhead is restored, its two halves function in harmony, and the primordial split or crisis is revolved and healed. I have read the above cosmology over and over and find no fault in it. In fact, I am amazed. It is, in a sense, a cosmic and certainly Gnostic, but the Taoist overlay is novel and pleasing. This is all highbrow, sophisticated. You don't have to understand this.
It's all Philip Dick saying this. This isn't.
Yeah, this is Philip Dick, yeah. The Taoist overlay redeems it from the flaws of conventional dualistic thinking, religions, and the problems therein. The lower realm sinks, not because it is corrupt or evil or somehow has rebelled, but because it is the nature of yin to sink. That is the nature of yang to rise. The pre-Socratics, those people who were around before Socrates, were aware of this. The model of the winnowing fan and the concept of the vortex. Yang must assimilate yin to keep the totality intact. Yang must renounce its natural tendency to rise and must descend. It cannot expect yin to rise because yin is not wise. It is only nous, and I don't know what that word means, N-O-O-S, that can understand that it must compensate against its own natural tendencies and do what is unnatural to it. Yin, so to speak, thick, unthinking, not noose, and then it has in parenthesis, mind, and then descending into the yin realm is a sacrifice on yang's part, which through its bright or wise nature, it realized it must make, but it pays a great cost in terms of suffering, loss of memory and identity, abilities and faculties. It becomes pseudo-yin, literally disguised in the yin realm as if it were actually yin, even to the point of forgetting, until reminded, that it is not. This is the agony we face here in this irreal and dense yin realm. We yang traces. This is not our home. We are voluntarily... We are voluntary exiles here, alienated and alone, violating our own natures for a salvific purpose, a necessary purpose. Yin would not understand this, and until anamnesis sets in for us, we, in our distress, do not understand the reason either. Eventually, it will be revealed to us. Meanwhile, we ache with longing for our proper home, dimly remembered but deeply felt for. Thus we suppose we are being punished. It feels like punishment, and we make the error of assuming we have sinned. On the contrary, we have renounced joy. Okay, here goes. Straight upwind. On the contrary, we have renounced joy now, to produce greater joy later for the good of all creation. We are the Godhead itself, suffering the need to be what it is not, to ensure the ultimate stability of the universe, the unity of love. And moral, it is the ethical requirement placed on the Yang traces by their own bright nature to abandon their natural tendency to rise, to escape what is heavy and dark and sinking. They must go in pursuit of the falling part of the cosmos for the benefit of those and that which otherwise would be lost. This is the highest law, to violate one's own nature for another's good, and the most difficult and painful law to fulfill. Because of this need, there is distress in the cosmos, distress for the innocent especially. My cosmology simply presents it as fact. To escape it, we would have to allow the cosmos to decompose. Could we do that? The tragedy is, by the very nature of the sacrifice we make, we are occluded from knowing why. This is part of our sacrifice, our yang understanding. We must take on the dullness of yin to save the cosmos. We sacrifice the knowledge of why we sacrifice and assume guilt, spurious guilt, in its place. This is asking a lot. But consider who we really are, or once were and will.
I guess when you dropped out.
Oh, there you are.
This is Heist.
Dial in again. Crisis, by the way, just means mixture.
I want to say thanks to all those people who joined in through BBS, because BBS is leaving us. Lynn, are you here with us?
Let me go check out see what's happening.
Bring some tissues.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being here, Carla.
It's been a delight.
Hello?
Yes, Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
I dropped out, right?
Yes.
Did I drop out before I read all of that, or before?
Yes. You dropped out in the middle.
Oh, my God. Well,
No. Only a minute ago.
I think it was somewhere around, but consider who we really are. It was real close to the end.
Well, you know what? Hang on.
Can't hear you again.
Vin, we cannot hear you. Yeah, now you are. Yes, we hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
You're there.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? We don't have time to reread what we lost. Although, if you want to stay on the phone line, I'll reread it. And then we're going to do something special with Carla on the phone line. But if you're listening on BBS, we're going to wish you good evening and thank you for being here. And we'll see you Wednesday. And again, I'm going, when we do a mail out on this, I'm going to post on the Spirit Channel the text of that whole thing so you can read it. And it actually, as it comes to an end, it really, I am going to read it on the phone line for those that are still here. And I'm going to unmute everybody.
I will be so upset.
And we'll see you next time. Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Very powerful, Wynn. Thank you so much.
Hang out on the phone line for a little longer. Okay. Don't play. And we have a special treat. You're on CS. Let's see it up. Hey, okay. Now. Carla, are you there?
I am.
I'll tell you what, I'm just going to read this last paragraph because this is, you know, this is like a poem. It builds to this dramatic point. And the point is, I mean, the point, just in my words, is that there's so many millions of people on this planet, and particularly many of those of us who resonate with this kind of material that we're presenting,
who voluntarily chose to come into this realm, knowing they would forget everything, and they did it as a huge sacrifice, getting retrapped in reincarnation, and until they could find something that would wake them up. And they did it because if they didn't, this realm would be lost. And it's only those beings that made that sacrifice that gives this realm the hope, the possibility of reuniting with the Yang, the greater light god in the universe. And Philip Dick's moral, it is the ethical requirement placed on the Yang traces by their own bright nature to abandon their natural tendency to rise, to escape what is heavy and dark and sinking. They must go in pursuit of the falling part of the cosmos for the benefit of those and that which otherwise would be lost. This is the highest law, to violate one's own nature for another's good, and the most difficult and painful law to fulfill. Because of this need, there is distress in the cosmos, distress for the innocent especially. My cosmology simply presents it as a fact. To escape it, we would have to allow the cosmos to decompose. Could we do that? The tragedy is, by the very nature of the sacrifice we make, we are occluded from knowing why. This is part of our sacrifice, our Yang understanding. We must take on the dullness of yin to save the cosmos. We sacrifice the knowledge of why we sacrifice. An awesome guilt, spurious guilt in its place. This is asking a lot. But consider who we really are, or once were and will be again. Who else can do it? There is no one else. There is only yin, which does not know. The part of the organism that knows must help the part that doesn't know. But this means abandoning its own knowing. It becomes what it helps, a dreadful irony, one that hurts, but it is only temporary, just for a little while, and then we go home for all eternity. That's the end of that. And Carla, are you on?
I am. I just think he was brilliant to put that together. It sounds, as he noted, very much in some ways like the Gospel of John in the Bible, stating that the light came into the darkness and the darkness knew it not. But the darkness also could not do anything to remove it. And so the light remains. And we are children of the light if we believe in Jesus. Very similar in those points.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus himself often said, you know, you are heirs through hope of the Creator. You are children of God. You are sparks of the Creator. I give you the Holy Spirit. And that Spirit is with you until the end of the age. And that Spirit will be able to share with you the knowledge that you do not have. So ask for the Holy Spirit. Ask for its passion. Ask for its surety. And I think in whatever way we call upon the Spirit, if we can escape Christianity, fine. Doesn't matter. What matters is our awareness of who we are. We have come into the darkness. We are not the darkness. We are attempting, in our clumsy way, to lighten the darkness. And there is great joy in that service, and there is great suffering in that service. And I certainly can testify to that. But, oh, I would not change anything in my life. Not one iota of it, because of the joy of knowing that you're actually helping. And I get letters every day. So, you know, I no longer have any question. I'm helping, okay, I get it. You know, so I just want to go on and keep on and be a part of this wonderful sacrifice that we all are part of, so that we find out who we really are, or who we once were, as Dick said, and will be again. Who else can do it? There's no one else except us bozos. Isn't that funny? Isn't that ironic? And isn't it wonderful that we bozos can do this thing? And we can do it together, you know? That's the thing. We can't do it isolated from each other. Not really. We really have to know that everybody else is right there with us, or wants to be, and wants to know how. So the service is the imparting of information to help people get it, to help people begin their own walk in spirit.
And we are actually extensions of the divine in this realm.
Indeed.
And if not for us, who? That's what he's
so
saying.
Step up to the plate, humanity.
The plate.
Yeah.
Forget step up to the plate, humanity. Just step up to the plate, those of you who are listening and can integrate them. You don't have to feel guilty. You don't have to feel shame.
No, no.
It's not.
If it appeals to you, grab onto it. And there are people to help you with that.
Right. Now, we have something special we're going to do, and I'm going to unmute people and see who wants to take a chance, but I'm not going to tell you what you're taking a chance for. Is that okay, Carla?
Oh. Well, it's okay, except that I was wanting to ask you if I could tell you the history of Rosie.
We are.
But if I tell you the history of Rosie, then that'll spoil your surprise.
Right. So let's just have somebody say, somebody who thinks they need a lot of support and help. Somebody who's really going through it. And let me see. You know, the problem here, the reason I'm being so, what's the word? Unupfront.
Yes.
You know, below the surface and bringing this, is that everybody's going to want this. And we don't have time. And Carla doesn't have energy. So we're just experimenting with this to see if we could do it for a few people and see how that works. And as of right this moment, Carla and I are going to do some kind of session on Saturday where we're going to do maybe a three-hour session discussing the Law of One material. So watch for my notice. There's going to be a small charge. And no one will be turned away that can't afford it. So, and that note, let's see. Do we have any?
Teresa will take a chance. I'd like to go after Teresa. This is Daphne, please. Hello, Daphne.
Two.
Pardon me? This is Daphne, too. Hello, Daphne. Hi.
And more.
Pauline. Pauline, we'll take.
Pauline?
You just weren't.
Pauline, where are you?
Enough,
Paul.
Okay.
A lot of noise, but I hear Daphne number two from Illinois and Colleen. Can I mute those if you want me to?
Yeah, was that Colleen?
Colleen from Vancouver.
Vancouver, not Pauline, Colleen. Okay. All right, stand by. And I'm going to, everyone's muted again. And we're going to unmute you in just a second, or the people that said the thing. Well, one time, Carla and I were doing one of our Monday night shows probably a year ago, And I don't remember how it came up, but I discovered that Carla had an unusual talent that was different from the Rob channelings or the Flo channelings. And I wanted to take a moment and let Carla share with you a little bit about this unusual talent that she has that came up on that show. So go ahead, Carla.
Okay. In 1971, which was 3 years before I began channeling, and while Don was still involved in trying to look at physical things rather than metaphysical things, we went to Anderson, Indiana, to several seances where people were talking to their dead relatives. Don just wanted to find out if it was true that, you know, there was life beyond death. He was really, truly seeking heart. Well, you know, there were three that we went to that were completely, you know, people running around in sheets and bilking the public. And then we went to a fellow named James Tingley. He was remarkable. He was the most authentic materialization medium you could ever want. And we went to him twice. It was just a pleasure to be at his seance. The second seance that we were in was very powerful. And at one point, a little form rose up, not from his enclosure, which is where the light, you know, the plasma usually comes from, but it just rose up from the floor. And it ran around the circle to me, and I couldn't see. I don't see well in the dark. I have only 30% of my cones and rods, which means I don't see well in the dark. So Don said to me, he says, you've got somebody hanging on to your knee and just hugging you for all she's worth. She looks like a little child. And she said her name was Rosie, and she was an angel. And she just loved me and loved my energy, and she wanted to be with me always. She promised me that she would make me feel safe. She promised me that she would always love me. And she promised me that she would help me find lost things. She hasn't ever helped me find lost things. I'm too dense for that. But she's been wonderful. And I discovered one time when I was desperately concerned for a friend of mine that she could ask other angels if they wanted to come and be with people. So I discovered I had the ability to ask Rosie, and Rosie would tell me who the angel was and where they were going. So I would appreciate it if I could hear just a bit about your story before I ask Rosie anything, because I'd like to be a friend of yours and not just a stranger. And when I ask Rosie, I'd like to be your pal and say, my friend needs help. Thanks.
I can hardly hear a word.
Could you hear anything?
I can hear you. Are you there, Wynn? I cannot hear Wynn now.
Oh, good.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
All right. I was muted.
Did you hear that?
I heard it, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, we're all right then.
Yeah. Good. I mean, briefly speaking, just in case I'm louder than Carla, I'll just tell you in a couple seconds what she just said, is that she had this little being, light being, that introduced itself to her and said it was Rosie, and that wanted to work with Carla, and that Rosie was associated with all these other angels, and that Rosie had the ability to assign angels to people to help them. And so that's what we're going to do right now. And I know everybody wants an angel assigned to them. And I'm going to work on the project of figuring out how we can do this en masse. But right at the moment, we can't. So we had three people, and I wanted Teresa, she was the first person, to unmute herself, to do star six, and just say hello, and we'll let you know when we hear you. Teresa.
Me?
Yes, we hear you, Teresa.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, Teresa,
yes.
Maybe you could just share a little bit about yourself so that they can tune into your energies, and then we'll turn it back over to Carla and see what happens. And what would you do with an angel if you had a personal angel to help you?
Oh, wow. That's a lot. let me see if I can grab things quickly that pop in my head is important. Adopted. My parents were estranged from me. My father spent his life in prison. And my mother is schizophrenic. My grandparents raised me. My grandfather came from Hungary. They kept the family secret about being Jewish from Hungary for years. I just found out recently. And I have found out a lot about myself in the past year that is unfolding to me, and I don't really know why, except that I think that I gained some strength from knowing some of my ancestry, and I'm alone and get lonely. I'm estranged from my husband. I've lost everyone in my life, my daughter, my husband, my mother and father, so everyone that's really important to me. So I find myself alone now, far away from everyone, in a cabin on a frozen lake, and it's beautiful here. And I'm trying to find my purpose in life, and finally I'm alone to do that. So if I had an angel, I suppose I would want that angel to be of assistance in that.
Mostly what angels do is it just make you feel safe. And they make you feel that you're not alone, that you're always loved. Loved to death. Just loved and loved. You know, hugged and hugged. So I think that it grounds you in a funny way. Not to have an angel with you that is part of your mission in life. So let's see what Rosie has to say. Rosie, are you there, sweetheart? Rosie's here. Well, Rosie, did you offer an angel the opportunity to go and see Teresa? Yeah. And who is going to go? Oh, my goodness, it's a fellow named Quinn. She says that he is very eager to help you, very eager to be with you, and he'll do his very best to help you to realize your mission and just realize what a wonderful person you are. So you have Quinn. Now you must ask for him, and you need to thank him every day. Otherwise, following the rules of free will, he won't be able to help you. So just say, Quinn, I know you're there. Thank you so much. And then you'll feel that safety, and you'll feel that companionship, and you can go from there.
Thank you so much, Quinn. Thank you very much. I look forward to any assistance I can glean from Quinn, and I will be very grateful. Thank you.
And let us know your experiences, okay?
Okay.
Share it back.
And, Wynn?
Yes.
Morgan here.
Morgan.
Hi, Dom. I'm in California.
Wait a second. I don't know if we have time for four.
No, I don't need one. I just wanted to tell you how wonderful it has been having the angel Morgan come to me.
George, you mean? Was it Morgan? Morgan.
I think it was Morgan.
Okay.
I thought that's what you said. Things got a little muffled.
I think it was Morgan.
It was definitely Morgan.
Morgan. That's what I heard in my head.
That's the one with George.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough. It has been
so wonderful.
2 days have been so different from the whole rest of my life. I can't tell you how
so
wonderful
glad.
And appreciative I am. And I he asked me when he first came. He said, "Can we be one being thing?" And I said, sort of like I always do. I said, could we just be friends first? He said, whatever you want. But then by the morning, I said, if you can integrate, come on in. That's fine. Because it was such a light lit blessed evening. It was the most peaceful hug I have ever gotten in my life. And it was fabulous. And he was talking to me all night, and that's fine with me. So anyway,
now, Morgan,
thank you.
Morgan, you yes. tend to be intuitive, right? You can feel things and sense things,
oh, yeah.
right? So not everyone is, they may get their angel talking to them. They
oh.
only may get good energy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that too, yes.
So I just want to make sure that everyone doesn't expect your experience. But thank
right.
you for sharing it. And that was
oh,
the first that was the first time we did this recently. The first
right.
angel. And why we decided to try this again. And thank you, Morgan. And
oh,
thank
you're
for sharing.
So welcome. Thank you, guys. Bless you guys. And keep up the good work.
All right.
Oh, okay.
And is Daphne, too, there?
Yes, hi.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We hear you.
Okay, great. I call because I need guidance. On 12/22, I had a light show that appeared in my bedroom. And since that night, the lights haven't left my room. I mean, I had red lights, green lights, fluttering lights. This went on for an hour and a half. And since that time, the lights, they're spiraling, and they're in my room every night. And I just realized 2 days ago that the lights are coming inside of me. And I realized this because I went through being afraid, slept in another room, and I decided to look into the darkness, and that's when I saw all the lights. They're not going away. They're now a part of me, and I see them in my hands, in my legs, in my whole body.
Well, lucky you.
So I'm going through, you know, I feel in love, and then I feel fear. So I'm not sure what to do.
Well, I encourage you not to feel the fear, because this happened to you because of the enormous changes in energy after the winter solstice. 2021, December 21st, 2012.
Okay, but why are they becoming part of me now?
Well, they were part of you in the
I'll
first
be at
place,
work,
and for some
I'll
reason.
I'll go in the bathroom in the dark, just so I can
yeah.
see the light.
Well, that's handy.
And they're still there everywhere I go.
I think that what you need to do, if you don't want them to be there all the time, is just talk with them about it. Say, I really am having trouble seeing you all the time. Could you dial it back? Could we do this at a certain time of the night, or, you know, could we do this when I am ready for it and not all the time, because it's kind of blowing my mind. And talk with them. They're positive. They're going to listen to you. They're going to want to obey your free will.
My mother would say, dial it down to 90.
Well, you need to ask them to do that. And just say, you know, that this is disturbing you, and you need... You knew that they didn't want to disturb you, that they're trying to tell you that it's a different reason. But you get it, and you don't have to see it all the time. That's what
all right.
I was going to say. Am I still there?
You're still here.
Okay, good. I got something weird on my phone, and I thought, oh, my gosh, it's happened 4 times.
So are these angels already, or can you give
oh, yeah.
me an angel?
They're angels already.
Yeah. But do I need another one?
They're just
no?
friends of Rosie.
Okay.
So I need to leave at 10:30. So if we're going to offer another angel, do we wish to offer this angel?
Bless you, Carla. Thank you.
Teresa, you would like an angel, yes?
Teresa just got an angel.
I got Quinn. And Quinn has told me that love is the glue that holds the universe together.
I mean, Daphne,
yes.
Daphne too. You'd like an
yes.
angel, right?
Yes,
so
I
go
would.
Ahead, Carla.
Okay. Well, I need to know just a bit. Can you just
yes.
talk about yourself a little bit so that Rosie knows which angel to send, because ain't
yes.
they have personalities?
Yes, I'm 52 years old. The oldest of 3 children, born and raised in the Illinois area, and right now I'm looking into starting divorce procedures with my husband. We still live in the same house. I don't have any children, but I was a foster parent for like 6 years, and I was guardianship over my niece and nephew. And I've just had a lot of things going in my life lately where I want to change jobs. And the thing with my marriage, my mom has had a terminal illness, so I feel a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then with
all
this
right,
coming
Rosie, that
with
should
the
be
light,
enough. Rosie, is that enough?
Okay.
She says, yes, that's enough. She can say, Rosie, who, sweetheart? Having trouble getting the name. Could you say that again, Rosie? Her name is Esme. I've never heard that name before, except in literature. E-S-M-E. And she's a young woman. She says she would very much like to help you take the pressure off and find a
what
place
is her name?
Of safety. Esme.
Esme?
Esme. E-S-M-E.
Oh.
Odd name. I had trouble with it, too. But,
mm.
But that's her name. And she says she would very much like to be with you and help you to deal with life. She says she will attempt to make a safe place for you and to make you feel loved.
Now we have Colleen unmuted, and she would love to have an angel, too.
Well, I promised my husband I would leave at 10:30, so let's have her next time
okay.
we do this, which is Wednesday, right?
Wednesday?
Are we going to do it? Are you there, Wynn?
Let's drop the
glass. I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Am I supposed to call in Wednesday to do some angels?
Yeah, call in at the end of the call on Wednesday, and we'll do
okay,
some.
So
okay,
so let her be the very first next time, because I've got to say bye-bye at 10:30.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
thank you so
much,
Carla. Thank you.
It's been my blessing. You just lift me up, you guys. Thank you, Wynn. You're always a pleasure. God bless you, Terry. I can feel you. We haven't talked. Thanks for the email. I'll do my best to send you the re-edited thing, my beautiful re-editing. And
thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye for now,
bye-bye.
You guys. I love you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye from two Morgans.
So we're going to stop the recording. Just let it run. And we'll see you all next time.
Your conference recording has stopped.
Goodbye,
Sal. Good night.